Hello, and welcome back to the Best of Women's Fiction podcast. I'm Ashley Hasty, the book blogger behind hastybooklist.com, a college fashion and marketing instructor, and as of last November, a new mom. I am thrilled to be working with Lainey again this season. We have a fantastic lineup of authors for you. Without further ado, let's see who's up next. In this episode, I chat with Mary Camarillo, the multi-award-winning author of Those People Behind Us, which Diana Wagman, author of Spontaneous and Extraordinary October, describes as a fascinating and perceptive read about growth, acceptance, and understanding people different than yourself. We discuss Mary's journey to becoming an author, her favorite book she's read lately, and of course, her latest novel. Stay tuned. Mary, welcome. I'm so excited to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here. Thank you.
We have so much to discuss, so I don't want to waste any time. For those listeners who may not have yet read Those People Behind Us, will you share your synopsis?
Sure. Those People Behind Us publishes on October 10th. It's set in the summer of 2017. It's post-Trump, pre-pandemic, which seems like historical fiction to me. It's set in a suburban, coastal, Southern California neighborhood and divided by protest and politics and escalating housing prices, like so many neighborhoods are these days, which really impact the lives of five neighbors. There's five characters. There's a real estate agent. There's an aerobics teacher. There's a haunted Vietnam vet who's taking care of his aging mother. There's a woman who's had a horrific tragedy that's turning away from her husband towards reckless behavior. And there's a young boy who's dealing with the abandonment of it by his father by slamming on a drum set and setting things on fire. There's a lot going on during this summer. In the end, all these characters realize that they have a lot more in common than they ever expected.
You set quite a bit of your stories, if not all of them, in Southern California. What is it about that area that draws you to write books about it?
I've lived here for about 30 years, actually longer than that, in different parts of California. Huntington Beach, especially, is where I live, is a very interesting town. It's got kind of an outlaw vibe. It was an oil town back in the early 1900s. There was a big real estate boom here later. It was an affordable beach town when my husband and I moved here. We were both postal workers. This is a place we could afford to buy that was relatively close to the beach. It's a surf city. It's officially called Surf City USA, like the Jan and Dean song. It was a punk scene in the 70s and 80s. There's some skinhead culture here too. So there's a lot going on here.
I am endlessly fascinated to hear about that initial spark of inspiration that leads an author to a fully fleshed out novel. Do you remember that first spark for this novel that made you think that's the story I want to tell?
Yeah, I had some ideas. I was going to try to write a mystery, like a murder mystery. Mm-hmm. I had some characters that didn't really want to be in a murder mystery. This novel is really a pandemic story. It came from the gyms being closed and my husband and I walking around our neighborhood for exercise. We started making up stories about what we saw. Like the neighbor across the street left all the doors to the garage and the front door open all the time. So we thought, wow, something really bad could happen there. And then there's somebody pounding in a drum set. So that kind of inspired my drum character and Those People Behind Us. People were flying all kinds of flags and were wondering, what does that flag mean? And what are they thinking? What are their lives like? We also noticed a lot of wildlife, especially during the pandemic. Even though it's a suburban area, we have coyotes and skunks and raccoons and possums and all kinds of birds and all kinds of trees. We paid a lot more attention to them on these walks. So that ended up in the story.
I love that you are inspired by the people and things that were happening around you. I imagine you would be much fun to get like a cup of coffee with and just people watch.
That's my favorite thing to do. That inspires all of my work, really. It's just eavesdropping and making up stories about what people's lives are like. I'm really fascinated by that.
You mentioned your background in postal service. I want to take a step back for a moment. I'm curious about your journey to becoming an author. How did that background lead you to publishing your two novels?
I finally got my degree And then I worked my way up through management at Postal Service, managing a finance office. And then eventually I transferred over to the Office of Inspector General, which has oversight over the Postal Service. And I became an auditor and an audit manager, which meant that I was responsible for editing and writing countless audit reports, which sounds like a weird transition to fiction, but I noticed some similarities. Because for one thing, an audit report has to be interesting. Otherwise, no one's going to read it. Although maybe people don't read them anyway. But also, audit reports have to report on something that's wrong and say why it's wrong and who the heck cares. And as a lifelong reader of novels, I think there's similarities there. I think characters have to have problems. The reader wants to know why the character's behaving the way they are, and they want to care. So there's got to be some effect, some outcome that keeps the reader engaged.
I have to say, coming into this interview, I did not expect to see the parallels between an audit report and writing fiction. But I get it. I can definitely see that.
I mean, I was the kind of person that showed up with a clipboard and said, hi, I'm here to help you. And no one was ever glad to see me. No one really likes to be observed and written about, but it adds to fiction because I have lots of stories from the post office. My first novel, The Lockhart Women, is set at the post office because there's so many stories there.
I mentioned earlier that you've published two novels. You just mentioned your first one, The Lockhart Women, and of course, those people behind us, which are right here.
Here's The Lockhart Women with its very shiny stickers.
I was just going to say, you've won a slew of awards too. Yeah. I'm curious, drawing on your personal experience, the path that led you to where you are now, you have two published novels and all the awards. What one piece of advice do you think is most important for writers?
I have like five.
We want all five.
First, I think it's really important to belong to a writing group, to have someone read your work. But you also have to have confidence in your own voice and realize you can't take everyone's advice. Mm. Second, this is something one of my favorite writers, Richard Bosch, says all the time, is don't be afraid to revise. You can only make it necessary to do it again. Third advice, you need to support your writing community. Writers are incredibly generous. If you write reviews and go to their readings and write them thank you notes, they'll reciprocate. It's really amazing. I think you need to read like it's your job. And I think you need to support your independent bookstores. I think it should be against the law to go into an independent bookstore and not buy something.
I love that. I completely agree. I think that's a great rule of thumb. For not just all writers, but all readers as well.
Yeah.
You mentioned the revision process. I always like to hear about a writer's process. Most writers tend to group themselves into plotters or pantsers. Mm-hmm. Do you identify with one or the other, or are you somewhere in between?
I'm totally a pantser. I wish I wasn't. It's very inefficient. But first I think of the character, then I see what kind of trouble I can put them in, and then I can figure out if they can work their ways out of it. I don't know where I'm going when I start. I have the characters tell me what they're going to do. I always overwrite. Like The Lockhart Women was originally 106,000 words. Finally trimmed it down to about 90,000 words. I had a scene in The Lockhart Women where the lead character at the end of the story goes off to Cuba on an educational trip. And it was really fun to write, but it had nothing to do with the story. So I'm not afraid to cut. That's not in the novel. With those people behind us, my real estate agent character, I had her in a writing group, which was also super fun to write about, all the people in the writing group. But I finally decided this doesn't have anything to do with the story, really. And I already have so many characters in those people behind us. I really didn't need to add another cast. So I cut that too.
Would have guessed you as a pantser just based on that one comment about how you started out writing a murder mystery, but your characters didn't want to be a part of that story. I love that. You followed where the characters wanted you.
Yeah, just a slight spoiler alert. One of my characters and those people behind us really wants to murder someone. I won't say anything else about that.
No, we don't want to give away too much. Lainey and I, and our Best of Women's Fiction podcast listeners too, are always looking for new books to add to our TBR piles. I'd love to hear about your reading world. What are you reading right now that you'd recommend?
I'm going out on a book tour, and I've set up this book tour to partner with other writers that I really like. Mm-hmm. My first book tour is with Stacey Russo, who wrote this book called Beyond 70. It's the lives of creative women, and I am beyond 70, so this relates to me. But it's completely inspirational. It's about all these artists and women, writers and photographers that either have been artists their whole life or they started later in life like I did. Stacy has another book coming out called Wild Crone Wisdom. I just love this cover.
Yeah.
And she's my first conversation. The second one is with Deborah Thomas, who I think you featured a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. This is her beautiful cover, Josie and Vic.
Really beautiful.
Deborah and I both write about Southern California, and we both have characters that are not celebrities or wealthy or can solve all their problems by inheriting their trust fund, finally. They're more real people. Really looking forward to that conversation. I'm going to be at Barnes & Noble with one of my favorite human beings, Kate Angier, who wrote The Shinnery. This story is set in Texas, and it's based on a real-life story from Kate's family. Long story short, it's a young woman who gets put into indentured servitude by her father to pay off a debt. She gets shipped to town to live with his family, and she's completely unprepared for all the treachery and deception that happens to her. You might say, well, what does that have in common with Southern California story? But both of our books really rely on setting and place.
Four excellent recommendations. Finally, I want to share how people can find you. What is your website and where do you hang out on social media?
My website is easy to find. It's marycamarillo.com. I have two Facebook accounts. You can follow me on my author account, Mary Camarillo Author. And then I'm on Instagram with my cat Riley, who's lurking around here somewhere. He's a 15-pound Flame Point Siamese, and he acts as my manager of marketing. So there's all kinds of pictures of him with different books.
Can you tell us anything about what's next for you, your next project, manuscript?
It's really too soon to talk about what I'm working on, but I can say that it's probably going to be set in the 70s, which is truly historical fiction now. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about that. Yeah, what I'm really hoping to do next is have a lot of promotion and stuff for the new book, but I'm really going to try to enjoy it. Mm. It's so easy to just stress out about all the things you should be doing and you didn't do, and look what that author won all these awards, and what are my Amazon rankings? Let me look at them again. I really want to just sit back and enjoy it. I was a little more stressed out with my first novel, and I'm hoping this one will just be more celebration. Yeah. Hey, I wrote two books. That's something to celebrate, right?
I think that could be number six for your list of advice for authors.
It's hard to do. You can check in with me in a couple of months and see how that's going.
Easier said than done, sure. But keeping that in the back of your mind is important. Yeah. We write because we supposedly love it, right?
I do love it. I mean, I'm really looking forward to like switching gears. The marketing publicity portion is a different brain than the creative part. And I'm looking forward just to getting back to creating more work.
Absolutely. I think we ask a lot of writers to not only write a book, which is nearly impossible in and of itself, but then also completely switch really the personality that it takes to sit down and write a novel, turn that completely around and then market that novel to the world. It's a lot of conflicting requirements.
With my first novel, I was so naive. I had no idea I was really going to have to give an elevator pitch or tell anybody what the themes were. I thought I would just say, why don't you read it? Yeah, it was a big awakening for me.
I do think it helps, as you mentioned, relying on the writing community. Like, you are partnering up with other writers to help with the marketing of your own book. Doing it together with that community that is so supportive is beneficial.
Yeah, and with the Lockhart Women, I really didn't get to do that because it was pandemic days, so I did a lot of stuff on Zoom. I think now people are a little bit tired of Zoom, so I'm really excited to go out, and even if there's only four or five people in the audience, I think it's going to be really fun, and I'll have somebody to talk to, so, you know, I'm excited.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, is there anything else you wanted to talk about that we haven't covered yet?
No, I want to give a shout out to you and the Best of Women's Fiction, because you do all this for other writers, and it's so appreciated and so generous of you. I want to thank you for that.
Oh, well, thank you. It's completely our pleasure. It is so much fun to get out from behind our own computers. And although we're still sitting at a computer, it's nice to be able to talk in real time with another human being. We really enjoy getting to talk to authors. And personally, I love a peek behind the process and how you got to where you are and the person behind the book.
I love that. I just saw on Instagram where you showed the behind the scenes process for you, like all the work that you do. I don't think people really have an idea of how much work this is.
I appreciate that. And thank you again for joining us on the podcast, sharing your book and your experience as an author with us and our listeners. It's a pleasure chatting with you.
You too. Thank you. I appreciate it.
For links to the books mentioned in this episode, the author's social media, and more, visit bestofwomensfiction.com. You can also see the video version of this same episode. I'd love it if you'd follow me on Instagram at Ashley Hasty. You can also subscribe to the podcast right here. And if you enjoy it, please share with your friends.